Welcome, members and guests, to the April 1st program of the City Club of Eugene, candidate forum for Lane County Commissioner North Eugene and Lane County District Attorney. I'm James Baldock, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Luvis Cobb, Attorneys at Law, where our client's best interests is our first concern, PacInfo Internet Solutions, the oldest, fastest, friendliest, and most reliable internet solution provider in Lane County, and Capella Market, Eugene's neighborhood grocer with world-class variety. Special thanks go to KPFF Consulting Engineers for supplying our office space and to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights and for archiving the podcast on their website. We'd also like to thank Community Television of Lane County for televising recent City Club programs Monday through Saturday at noon and Sunday at 9 p.m. We host nearly 50 original nonpartisan issue programs every year, and today is our 24th program in our 2015-2016 programming year. If you believe that civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, please join us. We welcome anyone who has a stake in community life. And now to the program. This is the first of 8 scheduled forums intended to provide Lane County voters with the opportunity to learn more about their candidates running for several contested races in the May 17th primary election. The events are presented by a collaboration of many groups, the City Club of Eugene, the League of Women Voters of Lane County, the League of United Latin American Citizens of Lane County, Eugene Springfield National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the Wayne Morris Family Farm, the AARP of Oregon, the Springfield City Club, the Wildish Community Theater, and several neighborhood associations, including Jefferson Westside Neighbors and Southeast Neighbors. Today's moderator is Rachel McDonald. She's a news reporter and a host with KLCC NPR for Oregonians.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. The League of Women Voters of Lane County do not support or oppose any political party or candidate. The League works to promote political responsibility through informed and active participation in government and to act on selected government issues. The rules for today's forum are as follows. The debate will begin with an opening statement by each candidate for a maximum of 1 minute. Following the opening statement, in the first session, there will be questions from the moderator and questions which were submitted by the sponsors of this debate. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to each question. Each other candidate will have 30 seconds to address the question also. In this case, we'll have 2 candidates for each part of the forum. The second portion of the forum will consist of questions from the audience, which will be vetted by the League of Women Voters. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to the question, and there will be no rebuttal. There are 3x5 cards available around the room. Please write your questions on the card and hold them in the air. A volunteer will be by to pick them up. So you can submit your questions during the program. We won't be taking a break for members to formulate questions. We will close giving the candidates 1 minute for a closing statement. Please hold your applause for your candidates so that we may address as many questions as possible. And candidates have drawn numbers to determine who will answer the first question. So we'll be starting with the candidates for County Commissioner for North Eugene, incumbent Pat Farr, and challenger Tony McCown. And first, you each get to introduce yourself with 1 minute each. So we could go ahead and start with, why don't we start with Pat Farr?
Okay. Hello, I'm Pat Farr, Lane County Commissioner, District 4, which is North Eugene. In the past, I've served as a Bethel School Board member, Eugene City Councilor, a state representative, and currently, once again, as a county commissioner. My private life includes working close to 20 years at Jerry's Home Improvement Center as we grew from 8 to about 350 employees. I was also the executive director of Food for Lane County. Most importantly, my wife Debbie is in the audience with us today, married 40 years. We have 3 fantastic children who keep us straight and answering questions all the time. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Tony McCown. I'm the chair of the Board of Education at Lane Community College, and I've served in a number of roles with the county. I've chaired their planning commission, served on their budget committee and human rights commissions. so I'm kind of ready for this next step in leadership. I was born and raised here in Lane County, and I kind of have a strong connection to our forest and farmlands, and I'm just kind of one of the main reasons I'm running for this position is to add protection to those and to continue with some of the great protections that our state and our county have offered to those beautiful resources. I look forward to speaking with you. I'd like to thank James Baldock and the City Club and the host of co-sponsors and bringing us here today. And I look forward to kind of sharing a little bit more about my values and why I'm running for County Commission.
Thank you. So the first question is for you, Tony McCown. Last year, the Oregon legislature passed Senate Bill 941, which strengthens background check requirements for gun purchases. The Lane County Board voted 4-1 not to enforce the law, calling it an unfunded mandate. You have actual experience with the Thurston school shooting. What would have been your opinion on this resolution? Would you have voted for it? Why or why not?
Unequivocally, I would have voted against it. I think that gun safety is imperative to keep our community safe and to keep our children safe. As you mentioned, I was a student at Thurston High School during that tragic event and was touched firsthand not only with that, but most recently with the Umpqua shooting. As the board chair at Lane, we had a lot of response to the Umpqua shooting and offering the Umpqua staff and student support. I think that it sends a bad message for the county commission to vote to not enforce state law. I understand the issues of funding and enforcement of laws, but I've said, you know, we don't want to put the option of prosecuting somebody off the table simply because of a personal Second Amendment or NRA directive. So.
And Commissioner Farr, why did you vote in favor of this resolution?
Thank you. You know, 30 seconds is not even close to long enough to clear up the misconceptions surrounding this. The County Commission does not enforce or not enforce laws. The Sheriff's Department has its hands strapped pretty severely enforcing personal crimes, and the Sheriff's Department will respond to personal crimes. Non-personal crimes are continually piled upon the Sheriff's Department, and many of them, including major thefts, we're not able to respond to. Consequently, the main response of the main issue behind the resolution, not a law, but a resolution, was that we don't have the funds to enforce it.
So we're going now to sponsor questions, and we'll start with you, Commissioner Farr. Lane County appears to be taking a more aggressive stance with respect to state and federal timber policy by becoming a litigant rather than an advocate. What is the justification for this approach, and how will you approach future advocacy given your involvement with the courts?
Absolutely. As of right now, you may or may not know, the county has nothing to do with the state as far as forests are concerned. We do have a pending lawsuit that hasn't begun yet regarding the BLM's use of forest lands. The reason that I am behind that is the something that we should talk more and more about, the fact that federal timber payments used to be only 12 years ago in excess of $30 million a year. This year it'll be less than $5 million. Now the services that we cut because we are not getting those federal funds include human services, include service to the homeless, include the sheriff's department. Currently we have one deputy patrolling the entire county. Until last week, we only had 16 hours of deputy patrolling the entire county. So really, we need to cause the BLM and the federal government in general to look at their forest use regulations and make it more attuned to providing counties with the money that we need to provide the services that people expect.
This litigious approach is an approach that the county's taken on a number of issues, and I strongly oppose it. I think we need to work more closely with our partners and not simply spend money in opposition to rules and regulations that they're passing. It strikes me that the contrast between we don't have enough money to enforce gun sale law, but we have enough money to sue on behalf of timber industry to expand the definition of sustainable yield. It seems that, you know, we have money to support our values, but not to support values we're opposed to.
And please hold your applause. Lane County is approaching a new budget process for fiscal year 17. Initial reporting is suggesting a multi-million dollar budget deficit. What are your ideas for plugging that hole, and are there opportunities for significant cost savings, or would you seek additional revenue? And Tony McCown, we're going to start with you, so we're going back and forth.
I've come of age and in a climate where we've continued to cut resources and cut revenue. From the federal government down onto local levels, we've capped and limited taxes in a way that have severely crippled all our services. It is time for us to look at additional revenues. There are two direct revenues at the county level. The one that I would first look at is the farm subsidy, the tax subsidy for commercial farming. A lot of those properties have been upgraded into commercial uses and are no longer producing the food that they were awarded their subsidy for in the past. We need to look at into those revenues. We also need to look into revenues of our planning department and potential fees for violators of our planning law. It's something that we're not doing at all at the county. I'm also a strong supporter of IP 28 and the additional revenues that the state could collect for services. I think that will have a tremendous impact all the way from the state on down to local level. So I do think we need to start looking at local revenues.
Thank you. Tony is correct. The tax assessment department does not have enough money to enforce our tax laws. That's a fact. If we get more revenue, then that we'll begin to enforce the tax laws. Quite frankly, we have a structural imbalance in our county budget that we are addressing. We cannot continue to put one-time funding into continuing services. We have to bring the structural imbalance to where in 10 years from now, the lines will not be crossing. We will not be dipping beyond our reserve funds.
Okay, there is a significant lack of representation of racial and ethnic minorities on elected bodies and appointed boards and commissions. What steps would you take to mentor minorities and encourage them to seek such offices to ensure the diversity of the community is reflected in its government? Commissioner Farr, we'll start with you.
Thank you. 2 years ago, I called for looking once again at a human rights commission. Now, this county used to have a human rights commission that was not able to fulfill its charge. The human rights commission is actually an equity and access commission we've been working on for 2 years, and it is providing equity and access not only inside of the county but projecting beyond the county limits. We're working very closely with the communities of color. We're working very closely with a broad number of people as we continue the work of the task force. We had a public forum just 2 weeks ago, and we'll have another meeting next week to continue and finalize the work of the Equity and Access Committee. That committee is going to be assuring that men and women who are eligible for jobs get into the pipeline, that we are able to mentor particularly the youth in our community to make sure that people feel qualified to apply for the jobs that are available. Quite frankly, it's a little bit embarrassing for me to look into a room and see, in fact, I'll look into this room here, as a matter of fact, and see that that my grandson may be able to walk into this room and not feel at home.
I'd be remiss to not point out that the fact that clearly we don't represent a strong level of diversity in our candidacies. But I do think that I represent a younger demographic and an age demographic that has been sorely underrepresented in the political process. I was part of that Human Rights Commission that was disbanded. And I think part of the problem is that this commission for years has not empowered their boards and committees to speak with a voice that makes them powerful. We need to fund these programs that Pat Farr is talking about.
Okay. We have a question now from the City Club. The county commissioners voted to use taxpayer dollars to pursue a lawsuit to increase logging on federal lands. Please explain how this decision is or is not good for Oregon's environment, water quality, and wildlife habitat. How is it a wise use of scarce funds? So I believe we'll start with Tony McCown.
We've sort of addressed this, but again, I've grown up in a climate of 35 years of of timber debate, and we have made very little progress as to going back to the way things were. I think it's time for us to look beyond timber as a source of revenue. I think it's time for us to look at more renewable energies. The climate issue is real. The science is in. We know that we can move beyond non-renewable energies, and our forests play a pivotal role in maintaining and containing that carbon. We should be looking at adding trees, not bringing more trees down.
Thank you, and we are adding trees. The fact is nobody wants to return to forest practices that were prevalent 30 years ago. Nobody really believes that that is sustainable. What we need to have is a sustainable source of revenue from the federal government that helps us provide tax services, tax assessment services, helps us provide human services. Currently, we don't have that. In joining a lawsuit with 17 other counties, we're able to get the BLM to look internally to see if there are ways to sustainably harvest the forests in ways that don't affect riparian lands, in ways that don't affect old growth, in ways that don't completely strip hillsides so that the soil washes down into the rivers. There are ways to do it. Modern forest techniques have nothing to do with the old forest techniques that historically have taken place in Oregon, and that's not what anybody is prescribing. What we really want is the federal government to do what they promised all those years ago and provide Lane County with the money that offsets the fact that the federal government owns more than half of Lane County and doesn't pay a single penny in property tax.
Thank you. This is another question from the audience. What are you doing to ensure economic development and job growth in Lane County? And Commissioner Farr, we'll start with you.
Thank you. You know, there's a lot of exciting things going on. We're looking at diversifying our economy. One thing we're looking at is a food group. And as you look around the county, you see all kinds of cool things happening with food. Things grow here. We used to grow a lot of grass seed. We don't grow as much grass seed as we used to. We used to process a lot of food here. We don't process as much food as we used to. So bolstering our food growing and food processing is going to be one way to diversify our economy and provide jobs. Glory Bee Honey is a great example. The county did help Glory Bee Honey to expand their operation. Today they sell little jars on shelves in New York State for about $15 a jar. We want more of that. More of that from Lane County is going to be beneficial. More high-quality crops being grown. Additionally, we need to make certain that if our local companies want to grow, they have a supply of land inside of our urban growth boundaries, and sometimes a little bit beyond, like, for instance, in Goshen, where they can make choices regarding building a plant or expanding a plant to provide more jobs. It's pretty exciting what we're able to do.
Commissioner Farr is right. You guys had a program a few months back about the local food system, and there was an indication that there's about $300 million and 4,500 jobs that are left on the table by not buying local. But that requires the county and other local governments to set policies to put that in place. That requires the county, which purchases a lot of food for their own cafeteria and for their jail, to purchase local, to start bringing down prices for the average buyer, to start making it more accessible, to give our farms the production levels necessary to reach us at our local stores. I also think that we need to take bold action and steps in developing public infrastructure for our technology sector. The United States ranks 12th internationally for access to high-speed internet, and it's not even close. It's like 83% is the highest. Our access is at like 47% nationally. It's even lower in rural communities like Lane County. We need to partner with the city, who's aggressively approaching high-speed access and fiber optics, and get that countywide.
Next question. Now that the county has a performance auditor, how would you anticipate using that office for the benefit of the county? And we'll start with Tony McCown.
This is another one of those positions that has been in the county, gone away, come back, been restructured. We've done that with positions. We've done that with committees and advisory committees, and it feels like every time it's done, it's to shape the vision of the current board. We need to create these visions and these committees and these positions in the vision of the county and the community, and let them run indefinitely. That being said, I think we need to allow that auditor's role to not just focus on internal projects, but the projects that are outsourcing and working with contractors and building and to really address the full spectrum of the money being spent. I think that it's a good position, and I'm looking forward to the work that comes out of the internal auditor's office.
Thank you. You know, while we have had internal auditors before, we've never had a performance auditor before. This is the first time the county's ever had a performance auditor. And the work of the performance auditor's office is to identify risk and identify opportunities specifically in departments. Join us next Tuesday. The first report from the performance auditor after 1 year of work is coming back on financial indicators. The next project that the office is working on is behavioral health. The performance auditor identified, went through all of our departments, identified 87 areas of risk. The number one area of risk in Lane County is behavioral health. So one thing that you'll see in the course of the next year from the performance auditor is that we will be addressing behavioral health issues and how can the county maximize its role and its impact on the many men and women in our community who suffer from behavioral health issues, whether it be mental health issues or addiction issues. Pretty exciting. The performance auditor temporary committee, I chaired that committee for the last year, helping the performance auditor develop their work plan, develop their strategic plan, and looking forward to the work of Shanda Miller and her office. Thank you.
What are the primary public safety issues facing Lane County, and how should they be addressed? If services need to be increased, how would that expansion be financed? What will be your approach to renewal of the jail levy? So it's kind of a two- or three-part question. We'll start with Commissioner Pat Farr.
Thank you. You know, public safety is the largest user of our general fund dollars. And as I mentioned earlier, our general fund has been reduced significantly. Our timber payments alone have gone from $30 million to $5 million. And what that has done is previous county commissions, before I was on the county commission, years ago the county commission cut the sheriff's deputy, the rural patrol, to 16 hours a day. We just increased that to 24 hours a day. How do you feel about that? One sheriff's deputy, all of Lane County, the size of Connecticut at any one point during the day. How do they have time to do anything, let alone respond to calls? So finding ways to fund the sheriff's department that has to come through the general fund, we have to find ways to bolster the general fund, and one way to do that is to, once again, hold the federal government's feet to the fire to get the timber payments back to the historical levels. Whether it is timber payments or something to offset timber payments, it's got to be reliable. We cannot be worrying about it from 1 year after the other. We just passed the jail levy. We had 125 jail beds in Lane County. We increased that. We promised we'd increase it to 255. We're now at, I think the number is 310. Thank you.
It's another issue where we have to look at revenues, and I've identified a handful. I've identified IP 28. I think that we also could look at a timber tax. Our neighbors to the north in Washington use a timber tax to fund a lot of their services. However, I think there's also some local evidence of with our fire merger. Our Eugene and Springfield fire merger proved to be very successful. The unions themselves are pointing to about $8 million in savings with that merger. It's an exploration that we need to explore. There's also, you know, we're coming to the end of a lifespan of a jail. That jail could be remodeled and remade in a way that is much more sustainable in what it takes to house inmates. It takes, I believe, 9 sheriff deputies to oversee 72 inmates at Lane County Jail. There are jails to the far extreme that take 2 deputies for 400 inmates. There's a happy medium there that we could create that would allow more inmates. And
so I think we have time for one more question, and then we'll have our closing statements. Tourism is heavily promoted. Please speak to the cost of this industry to infrastructure, water supply, traffic, permit enforcement, and other hidden costs. Are you in favor of cost-benefit analysis as public information? So I think this will start with you, Tony McCown.
Tourism is an important part of our economy. I think that I would like to focus more on internal county tourism. I think that growing up, it was my family that was in Florence, my family was in Oak Ridge, my family was around the county, and I think we've kind of become a lot more insular. By focusing on kind of inter-county travel and tourism, we reduce a lot of those costs associated, those external costs associated with travel, because we're not creating a lot of carbon footprint to get to Lane County. I think that external travel is important, and I think that we have beautiful resources around this county that are a huge attraction, and we need to support them through county tax incentives and whatnot, but we do need to be considerate of the environmental and neighborly concerns that come with a lot of that travel. I spent some time in Yamhill County. A lot of wineries.
Thank you. You know, I serve on the Travel Lane County Board of Directors, and we do great work. We attract people from all over the world to Lane County. And what do they do when they come to Lane County? Well, they eat in restaurants, they stay in hotels, they avail themselves to our recreation, whether it be sporting events, river rafting, whatever it may be. It's a world-class place to visit. We continue to encourage people to come to Lane County to visit and to return to Lane County. You know, every time somebody comes to a football game, we would like them to have such an experience that they want to come back when there isn't a football game. When they come to a world sporting event, a world track meet, they want to come back when there isn't a world track meet going on. And as far as the infrastructure is concerned, you know, when tourists come here, they usually stay in rooms. We have a room tax. When you go to San Francisco, you pay it too. And that's a part of what funds Travel Lane County and the efforts that we put out to bring people into Lane County. And when people come here, then they help our local businesses to thrive. It's a great part of our economy and one that we will continue to focus on. I'm looking forward to more of it. Thank you.
Thank you. So each of you will have 1 minute for closing statements. And the order is Tony McCown first and then Commissioner Farr.
I look forward to the opportunity to serve Lane County in an extended capacity. I think that the one thing that this commission has done over the last decade or so is look back and not look forward. I think I offer the opportunity for Lane County to look forward. We need to start talking about rehabilitation as opposed to jail beds. We need to start talking about people in the community rather than the investment into business and industry. We need to start talking about how we grow as a community, what it means to have public spaces and what those public spaces bring to us as opposed to what can we fill with in those public spaces. It's time for us to reinvent kind of politics because of the way we've limited and constrained our public resources, and I think I've proven to do that with the creation of the Lane Community College's downtown campus, creating community partnerships to create a bold vision and really serve the community.
Thank you. You know, I've only been a county commissioner for 3 years, so I cannot talk much about what happened before that, but my entire 3 years has been spent trying to find ways to do things within our means that are innovative and maximizing the resources that we have. Let's take one thing that we did last year. Let's take Operation 365. Last year, at the start of the year, Mayor Kitty Peterson and I got together, and we decided we were going to put 365 homeless veterans into houses. A daunting number. We found ways to do it last year that we'd never done it that way before. And ultimately, we put 404 homeless veterans into houses last year. Doing things like that are innovative. Tiny houses. We're focusing now on tiny houses that allow people to either occupy a home or to even own a home. Exciting things that are happening in the future and doing things very differently than historically the way that we've done it. When I got to the county commission, yeah, I found a lot of staleness. I found a lot of things that really needed to be rattled up and changed. Look at what we're doing. Check out the things that we're doing in Lane County. It's a bright place. We have a strategic plan the way we've never had one before. We have a community health improvement plan such as we've never had before. Look at our laws surrounding tobacco use.
Thank you. You are listening to KLCC. This is a Eugene City Club and League of Women Voters forum. We just heard from candidates for Lane County Commissioner for North Eugene, incumbent Pat Farr and challenger Tony McCown. Just ahead, we'll hear from the candidates for Lane County District Attorney.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
You're listening to KLCC. This is a Eugene City Club and League of Women Voters forum with candidates for Lane County District Attorney, incumbent Patty Perlow and challenger Clayton Tullis. I'm just going to go over the rules real quick. The debate will begin with an opening statement by each candidate for a maximum of 1 minute. Following the opening statement, in the first session, there will be questions from the moderator and questions which were submitted by the sponsors of the debate. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to each question. Each other candidate will have 30 seconds to address that question as well. And then the second portion of the forum is questions from the audience, which will be vetted by the League of Women Voters. And for those, each candidate will have 1 minute to respond, and there will be no rebuttal. And audience, you know what to do. So we'll begin with introductory statements. The order for answering questions is going to be Clayton Tullis and then Patty Perlow. So we'll start with Patty with your introduction, and then we'll go to the questions.
Thanks very much. I'm Patty Perlow. I was appointed district attorney by Governor Kate Brown on July 31, 2015. So I've only been in the position for the last 8 months. I can tell you, though, that those 8 months were spent shaking things up. We are doing things differently than they've ever been done before in the district attorney's office with regard to partnering with service providers and other agencies within the county and outside the county to focus on how to use our resources better, how to treat people better, how to address the needs of our victims, and how to allow people to re-enter our community from the correction system better. So I was born and raised in Oregon. I've been in the DA's office since January of 1990, so just over 26 years. And prior to being DA, I was chief deputy managing the office, the personnel, and the budget.
I'm Clayton Tullis. I'm a local attorney, former city prosecutor in Springfield. I have defense experience as well as prosecution experience. So what kind of pushed me towards running for DA are just certain instances of unfairness in the system that finally reached a precipice which I couldn't ignore any longer. So first off, I just want to thank the League of Women Voters specifically for one of their questions in their voters pamphlet that was posed to both of us. It had to do with juvenile justice and the commitment to have those people stay who are under 18 stay in the juvenile system. At that same time, the DA's office had just charged a 15-year-old in adult court. Right around the time the questions were due, the DA's office pushed that person back into juvenile court. So I'd like to thank them specifically for that. Justice being served. I would like to talk about, as we go forward with, I'll address it later.
Okay. First question. This is about the way Lane County investigates officer-involved shootings. In the case of Brian Babb, 1 year ago this week, a Eugene police officer shot him when he reportedly pointed a gun at police during a mental health crisis. His body lay in the doorway of his house for hours while officers waited for the interagency deadly force investigative team to arrive. The shooting was ruled justified by then District Attorney Alex Gardner. The Eugene Police Auditor and Civilian Review Board found major flaws in the IDFIT investigation. What could be done differently or better in how officer-involved shootings are investigated in Lane County? And we'll start with you, Clayton Tullis.
Sure. So here in Lane County, for whatever reason, it's the district attorney who makes that final decision. It's local police agencies who investigate themselves or their neighboring agency. So when you think about this abstractly, they're investigating their friends. The DA's office is making a decision regarding their friends. And what a simple solution would be to involve agencies from out of county to make that decision at a minimum, to open up the investigative process. It just baffles my mind that someone who is your friend can make the decision as to whether or not you killed someone justifiably.
Senate Bill 111 was passed, and Lane County was one of the first counties in the state of Oregon to create an interagency deadly force investigative team. The team's comprised of a lead investigator from the state police, and the sheriff's office is the co-chair of, or the sheriff is the co-chair of the team. The investigations are done in cooperation with the agencies together. The agency that's involved in the shooting is not ever the lead investigator, is not involved in processing evidence, and is not involved in any determination. With regard to the Babb case, the complaints had to do with the internal investigation for their needs as opposed to the criminal investigation and how that was conducted.
This question is from the sponsor. Immigrants and other minorities face racial profiling and implicit and unconscious bias, which can rise to the level of public safety issues for these groups. As district attorney, what types of actions or policies relative to this aspect of public safety would you initiate or propose to protect racial and ethnic minority populations? And we'll start with you, District Attorney Patty Perlow.
That's similar to one of the questions that was on the voters pamphlet. We don't have a very good measure for how racial minorities or ethnic minorities are being investigated. We aren't keeping very good data on that. And so we have started looking at that through the bookends at the jail, and I am initiating a program called Smart Prosecution so that we can make sure that at the after the cases come into the DA's office, we are looking at not who the offender is, but their conduct, their history, what their needs are, and how we can best respond to their needs to keep them from engaging in criminal behavior.
So, you know, in my experience as a defense attorney, I had firsthand experience with people who were from out of the country, who were charged with crimes, and one of their biggest concerns that was relayed to me is, hey, if I go to jail, I'm going to be deported. Now, these are typically people who are charged with minor crimes. And for minor crimes, we should rethink the situation and not break up families. Thank you.
It appears that the national dynamic of prisons being filled with the mentally ill is also occurring at the local level. Statistics show that fully 60% of those under supervision at the Lane County Jail have a mental health diagnosis, and that 73% are receiving psychotropic medications. What is the appropriate role of the district attorney to address this problem in a way that provides justice to victims while reducing the cost of crime to the public? And we'll start with you, Mr. Tullis.
The mental health crisis in our community is multifaceted. It's both caused by drug addiction as well as just, you know, there's a certain percentage of people who have mental health problems. Now, encouraging these people through intensive interaction with therapists and treatment providers so that when they're released from jail, they're taken straight to the treatment provider. They have a plan in place. They have medication waiting for them. So as soon as they get out, they're not, you know, they haven't lost it again. It's a huge problem in every city in the county and as far as the state is concerned as well, and we need to do a better job.
The Lane County Psychiatric Hospital closed in the late 1990s, and since that time, resources for the mentally ill have declined in our community dramatically. There is now a team working on it. We have a crisis intervention center opening in Lane County in May, and we have a team working on putting together a mental health treatment court so that we can stop putting people who are mentally ill in jail. That's been our only means of addressing people who have caused behavior problems in the community. We didn't have adequate resources, but we are increasing them now.
The 2016 legislature debated a proposal to require that grand jury proceedings be recorded. What is your position on that measure? And please explain why you think it's a good or bad idea. And we'll start with you, DA Perlow.
Well, let me start by saying I am not opposed to grand jury recordation. I offered to help write the bill that was in the last legislative session, and I was not taken up on that offer. That bill only affected three counties, Jackson, Multnomah, and Deschutes. It wouldn't have impacted Lane County at all, but the price tag on that bill is what caused it to die in Ways and Means, because it required the courts to take on the responsibility of recording, storing data, and distributing it without taking into consideration personnel that would have to be hired, what the equipment costs were going to be, data storage, dissemination of it, and so we need a better bill.
I am absolutely in support of grand jury recordings. The technology exists currently in the Lane County Courthouse. They record all proceedings anyway. We could make it happen with very little expense. The DA's office in Multnomah County for officer-involved shootings records all of their grand jury recordings. We could do that here with an ease of expense. My personal experience, I would like to grand jury recordings because I had a prior case where I know for a fact that the DA must have instructed the grand jury incorrectly in regards to the law. But I can't prove it because there's no grand jury recording.
White-collar crime has devastating financial effects on communities and individual families. What are your plans to investigate white-collar crime more vigorously in the future? And we'll start with Mr. Tullis.
So my understanding of white-collar crime in Lane County is that it's primarily handled by the Attorney General's office as well as the U.S. Attorney's office. I think that we would have the ability to prosecute those in county. For example, the recent real estate rental, Terry Shockley, my mistake, he could have been prosecuted a lot sooner in the county court system instead of waiting nearly a year for the U.S. District Attorney's Office to finally prosecute. In that time period, he had the opportunity to spend down his resources, to live in one of his other houses where we could have locked those resources down a lot sooner had we prosecuted him locally.
I understood the question to be about investigation, and actually Eugene Police has a terrific property crimes investigation team with some sophisticated investigators who are able to deal with the changes in computer technology. Springfield Police as well has a forensic expert, and the state police. So we have pretty good resources here for the investigation of those crimes. The definition of white-collar crime might be open to interpretation, but the Lane County District Attorney's Office has jurisdiction, co-jurisdiction, for any offense that's committed in Lane County.
And we're on questions from the audience now, just as a reminder. Should we introduce body cameras for all officers to resolve differing accounts of incidents, which I think we are doing in the Eugene Police Department? And if so, what is a timeline for this? So we'll start with you, DA Perlo.
The Eugene Police Department received a grant to have officers wear body cameras. And what we've discovered the challenge of that is again, data storage and dissemination to the defense. So if every law enforcement officer in Lane County is wearing a body camera, that's a lot of data. If they're wearing it for their entire shift, that has to be stored. We have to be able to manage at one scene every officer that was wearing their body camera and upload that and provide it to the defense. So while body cameras are great, and I'm looking forward to resolving all of the challenges of how to store and disseminate the data, that still remains a problem for us.
Okay. So body cameras by police officers are only, while they do wear them the entire shift, they only hit the record button before they go talk to an individual. So the amount of data that we're talking about isn't as obscene as Ms. Perlo states. And as far as research goes across the country where there are body camera recordings, instances of police misconduct and violence by police officers involving defendants goes way down. Why? Because they know they're being recorded. Cases settle a lot faster because there is a indisputable account of what occurred. Thank you.
Just a reminder that with the audience questions, you each have one full minute
to
answer.
I thought it was 30 seconds.
Okay. No problem. this question is probably more for the district attorney, but you get to answer it first, Mr. Tullis. Why has the district attorney's office not apologized to James Clevenger for putting him on the Brady list and ruining his career despite his clearing his name through his civil suit? Why haven't you investigated Chief McDormand and the UOPD?
Well, for those of you who don't know or haven't read my press release, I do address Mr. Clevenger. So he was a UO Police Department officer who reported misuse of funds as well as improper procedure that his superiors committed. They retaliated against him by first demoting him and then ultimately firing him. In 2014, after he had won his arbitration, was going to be reinstated, the UO Police Department submitted a report to Ms. Perlow and Ms. Gardner asking him to be placed on the Brady list. He had already cleared his name to the arbiter. He had an active civil suit going against these same officers. And for whatever reason, they decided to put him on the Brady list. Mr. Clevenger, I actually happened to bring the email, sent this email to Ms. Perlow asking for a chance to explain his side of the story. And he received no response from Ms. Perlow. He won $700,000 in part because he was still on the Brady list. And he's continued to be harmed by his placement there. Okay. He should be removed immediately.
If I may, there is no such thing as a Brady list. The district attorney has the obligation of providing exculpatory information to the defense in any case, and that's a good thing. That's the transparency that everyone wants. Mr. Clevenger, his information came to the DA's office during the time that Alex Gardner was DA. We didn't have a Brady list then. We don't have a Brady list now. Mr. Tullis is misunderstanding what the Brady obligation is to provide exculpatory information if somebody is going to be a witness in a criminal case. So the fact that we had a letter from the UOPD questioning the credibility of a particular witness would be disclosed to the defense. It doesn't mean he wouldn't be called as a witness. And then a judge would find whether or not it was relevant or whether it was admissible. So Mr. Clevenger has no barriers to being a witness in Lane County Circuit Court as far as the DA's office is concerned.
Okay, our next question from the audience. Can you address how this one is actually addressed to Mr. Tullis. Can you address how your lack of trial experience, management experience, and budgetary experience would not affect leadership and morale within the DA office?
I think I know who wrote that question. I do have trial experience. I've won jury trials. I've ran my own law firm before. I have budgetary experience. I've been in someone else's law firm and instructed other people as far as how to do their job. Morale in the office, I think, I would be changing policy in the office, and that would be the biggest source of morale because they've been doing the same thing for 30 years, and they would not be doing the same thing anymore.
If I may, the DA's office has a $10 million budget, and it's a third of that is grant-funded that requires grant management and following the rules of grants. We have five divisions. We have 62 full-time employees. It requires management experience. It requires budget experience beyond that of that just described by my opponent. And everything in the DA's office was shaken up in the last 8 months. We aren't doing the same old policies of the last 30 years.
Next question from the audience. And I guess we'll just go back to the order we were going to be in. So I'll have Mr. Tullis start with. Do you support mandatory sentencing? Why or why not?
For certain violent crime, I absolutely do. For instance, murder. That's 25 years to life. Aggravated murder is either has a mandatory minimum of life in prison without parole. I think that's fine. Violent crime has no place in civilized society. As far as property crime goes, I believe most of that would be better addressed through intensive treatment rather than sending them to prison, except for the most heinous of offenders, and that's in that regard. The prison population from Lane County is among the highest in the state. We can do better. Thank you.
The mandatory minimum sentence for aggravated murder is actually life without the possibility of parole for 30 years as opposed as life forever. There are three sentencing options for aggravated murder. I do support mandatory minimums for violent crime offenders because I prosecuted in Lane County in the early 90s before we had those, and somebody who committed rape of a child would receive probation in some of those circumstances, and that's just not acceptable. Mandatory minimums only apply in the most violent offenses, and for youth offenders, there are ways to get out of the mandatory minimums.
Okay. The DA is an elected official with little budgetary authority. How would you work with the Board of County Commissioners and other agencies to secure funding to carry out your responsibilities? And we'll start with you, Ms. Perlow.
Well, as I mentioned, it's a $10 million budget. $7 million of that comes from the general fund with the support of the county commissioners, and they've actually, the county as a whole has done a terrific job of meeting together and with the support of commissioners to deal with the budgetary gaps that we have. The rest of the money in the DA's office has been grant-funded, and that is not a sustainable model. You have grants that run out in somewhere between 2, 3, and sometimes 5 years. We can't continue under that system. But in the meantime, while that's what keeps our doors open and keeps people processing the work in our office, I will continue to seek the grants that help us prosecute people. And some of those grants have been directly related to diverting people from our prison population and making sure that they are able to remain in the community, having wraparound services, mentoring, and the treatment that they need to be able to succeed in the community.
So the DA's office for a long time, you might recall some statements from Eric, previous DA, Mr. Gardner, that 1,800 cases last year, didn't viable felony cases, weren't prosecuted. Now, you have to think about that for a second because, well, how many misdemeanors weren't prosecuted, first off? And two, how many of those could have been reduced to a misdemeanor and prosecuted and continue to be prosecuted? So the DA's office currently has an artificial limit of about 400 cases, 400 misdemeanor cases per district attorney. Their felony, I will say that their felony limit is appropriate. As a city prosecutor in Springfield, per full-time attorney, we had 2,300 cases. The 400 case limit was copied from the defense attorney limit, which defense attorneys have a much different job. They have to explain the law to an uneducated, someone who's not trained, as well as investigate the state's case. When the case comes into the prosecutor's office, it's from a police agency. They don't have to explain it.
Okay. This question is looking at the racial dynamics in our nation, demographic change, and disproportionate minority contacts. What will you do as DA to address these negative trends in communities of color? And do you agree that this is a real problem? So we'll start with Mr. Tullis.
Representation of minorities, both in the prosecutor's office and especially in the prosecutor's office, but also in the local police agencies, needs improving. I may be wrong on this, but I believe the prosecutor's office is literally all white. There could be some minorities who are working there. There might be one, but when I was there 4 or 5 years ago, there was only one minority there. It's not representative of the community. It should be somewhat close, if not better, than their demographic representation. I firmly believe in community policing that addresses individuals on a personal level rather than on a numbers level.
Well, there are two issues that have been raised there. The first is the proportionate minority representation in the criminal justice system. The only real evidence we have on that relates to the juvenile system. A study was commissioned, and it was determined that even though statistically the individual numbers of minorities in our juvenile system were low, so that the statistics could be greatly swayed by the arrest of one person, there was an over-representation. And so the juvenile system began assessing how they, through a risk needs study, when people come into detention, to make sure that people are detained for the same reason and that accountability agreements and prosecution is handled based on the same factors. We are moving in that direction in the adult system. I know that on the day I checked, the Lane County Jail had over 94% of the population, and it was identified as white. And the same thing comes for prosecution in the DA's office. And I don't have time to address the second issue about the makeup of the Lane County DA's office. Okay.
So we have time for one more question, and then we'll go to closing statements. And it's a big one. So we'll start with you, Ms. Perlow. How do you feel about the death penalty?
The district attorney is not a legislator. The district attorney is part of the executive branch, and because the death penalty is the law in Oregon and was passed by the voters, it is an option for a jury to hear in an aggravated murder trial. That said, it takes a jury of 12 unanimously for someone to be sentenced to death after a conviction for aggravated murder, and there are four questions that they have to answer in order to do that. I don't believe it is the power of one person, the DA, to overrule or to legislate the power of the voters. And so if there's going to be reform on the death penalty, it needs to be done by the people of the state of Oregon, not by the DA.
I fundamentally disagree with Ms. Perlow on that fact. It's actually the district attorney's decision whether or not to seek the death penalty in any particular case. They can say, we're only seeking life without parole. They can choose not to seek the death penalty. By sentencing someone to death, you're ensuring appeals that can go over a 30-year time period. There's a person currently sentenced to death in 1988 who's still going through his appeals. There's a person who was sentenced to death that was either in 1988 or 1992 who has had four retrials. Those are victims who have had to wait nearly 30 years for any kind of finality, and it's still not there. They might have to retestify. They don't have closure. And to me, that length of time in relation to the death penalty makes it fundamentally unfair for everyone on all sides, especially victims. They wake up every day not knowing whether or not their case is going to be retried.
Thank you. So we're done with our question portion, and we have 1 minute each for closing statements. So we'll begin with Clayton Tullis.
So, you know, the DA's office, when Trooper Edwards kicked a surrendering Justin Wilkins in the shoulder, it's caught on video, did nothing. You know, when he won his civil suit, their only statement is, oh, I'm sorry, we forgot to charge him with reckless driving. You know, he should have been investigated. He should have been, at the very least, reprimanded within the system, if not prosecuted criminally. The chief of the UO Police Department, as well as the other officers involved in James Clevenger's case, should have been investigated criminally for official misconduct. Now, official misconduct only requires that you use your position, essentially, I'm simplifying this, to retaliate against someone else, which is exactly what they did, and they should be investigated for it. By failing to have accountability within the system, it's encouraging this sort of behavior to continue.
Someone with very little experience shouldn't be making the most important decisions that affect the people in our county. It takes experience to know how to prosecute a violent crime. It takes experience to know how to investigate that. It takes someone who's actually prosecuted a serious offense, a felony, a rape, a murder, a child a child abuse case to be able to tell a police officer how to better investigate a case and assess that. And it takes someone who has had leadership and supervision experience to be able to lead an office of 62 individual FTE and a host of over 25 volunteers. It takes someone who understands child support enforcement laws, somebody who understands employment law, somebody who understands what the medical examiner's responsibilities are in our community, to take leadership of the chief law enforcement officer for Lane County.
Thank you, candidates. You are listening to KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. This has been a Eugene City Club and League of Women Voters forum with candidates for Lane County District Attorney. We heard from incumbent Patty Perlow and challenger Clayton Tullis.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And thanks again to our sponsors, Luvis Cobb Attorneys at Law, PacInfo Internet Solutions, and Capella Market. Join us on Friday, April 8th for the Eugene Mayor Candidate Forum. Additional information about these programs, parking, and lunches will be available on the City Club's website. Thank you for your time. This concludes today's program.